Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure having you with us today. We're on the air a little bit later today. Well, post-holiday, I guess you'll call it, but we're good to go. And today we are going to be speaking with Barbara Jo, and she has written a wonderful book, and she is going to talk to us about her life, which I find so extremely, extremely encouraging and inspiring to all of us. It just be inspired by her being able to go out and do the work that she does. She is a volunteer in the Peace Corps in Honduras. Now, do you really believe that someone that is over the age of 50, she's a little older, she'll tell us about this story, and be able to be a volunteer in a foreign country and not even think about it? You know, just before the show, Barbara and I were sharing a few things about how we go through life and what we can see and what's going ahead of us. And so many people, myself being a alternative medicine doctor, I find that when people come to me, they get a diagnosis or a treatment or a prescription, and that ends up holding them back from everything out in front of them. And what Barbara has found is that she lets nothing hold her back. So this will be a very inspiring hour. And now that it's after Thanksgiving, this little lull between Thanksgiving and Christmas, as I like to call it, we always like to think about what we're going to give to other people, what we like to give to them. And what I would say is, what are we going to give of ourselves? Instead of a gift, instead of all of these things you buy, or all these things you think of, oh, I have to get them something else, and it's got to be bigger and better, and I need to check on my budget, and let's go see if we can all go rake in all the sales. What if you gave of yourself? What if you gave of your time? And what if you also gave of your heart, which is what Barbara has done? So today, my guest is Barbara Jo. Her book is Triumph and Hope, Golden Years with the Peace Corps in Honduras, and it's available on Amazon.com. We do have that link on today's show page, so don't worry, you'll be able to click right in there. But it's not only the story of about her volunteering in her 60s, and she said yes, until this year she is still planning on going, but it's also of a woman recovering from an untimely death of her son and her Cuban foster son. Now that's very important, because there are times in our life that we have events and they just put us right to the wall. We're going to hit that wall, and you just feel like you turn into dust yourself. You don't know how to get up, how to keep going. And all of these things around you that you called your life, or what you may believe you have created to be the rest of your life, change. Then what do? Barbara has learned a way to give to others. So I'd like to welcome Barbara to the show. Barbara? Welcome.
Hi,
to the show.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jeanette, for inviting me. And I would have to say something about my last name. People say to me, Barbara Jo, what's your last name? And I say, it's Jo. It's because I had a Korean father-in-law. He decided to spell our last name that way. So I've been stuck with that name ever since. And I'm really delighted to be here and to share my experiences. I always wanted to join the Peace Corps ever since I heard President Kennedy on the radio in 1961 announcing its formation. At that particular point, I couldn't go because I was newly married. My husband and I had new jobs. We were buying a house. Later, we had children. We moved around the country, and it just wasn't the right time. Then my husband separated from the family, and I was struggling as a single parent. I thought, oh, when am I ever going to join the Peace Corps? Then I had a blow that was I would not wish on any of my listeners. that my older son, this was in 1994, and it was in the month of December, the month that we're in right now, that my son had an accident at his work and died suddenly, and I just plunged into the worst depression that I would have ever felt. And then 1 year later, almost on the anniversary of his death, I had a Cuban foster son who died of AIDS. By the way, yesterday was the Universal AIDS Day remembrance around the world.
But all of that is your life events that changes forms your life. You know, that is also, you know, when you said about the Peace Corps, I remember that in the 60s. And everybody wanted to give back. That was the age and the time where everybody wanted to give, you know. But then you were really just giving to your family. And when this happened to you, I can see where that is just an absolute, like we said in the beginning, it hits that wall, and what do you do?
Well, I certainly fell into an abyss when my son died, and when my foster son died, it was almost like I was already down. Then I started thinking, well, you know, death can come to you any time, and if I'm ever going to join the Peace Corps, I better do it. And that's when I really made the decision to do that. And so in the year 2000, when I was 62, I did join. And I had a gentleman friend who said, "This is ridiculous at your age. Mark my words, you're going to be home by Christmas at the latest." And I ended up not only staying the usual 27 months, but I stayed 3.5 years, so I stayed 3 Christmases, and I showed him that what I was made of.
Wow. And, you know, I think that's a sheer example of, you know, gathering your strength back up and being able to go on, because really, if you look at it, we really have the only choice that is to go on. I mean, you still have your life, and you really wanted to be able to use it to the fullest. I mean, that's so important, but so many people find it very difficult to gather that energy. I mean, did it take a while to do that?
Well, yes, of course. The first couple of years after they died, I was a basket case. I was working at the American Occupational Therapy Association here near Washington. I went to work. I came home. I came home and cried. I was thirsty because I shed so many tears. But somehow to be in Honduras in a new environment, not associated with them whatsoever, dealing with everyday problems, a different language, if you will, and I was fortunate that I already knew Spanish, so that sometimes is an impediment when you're joining the Peace Corps at an older age to learn a new language. But that was very healing for me. So, and to be useful, I think all of us need to have a meaningful, useful experience. And when I came home, I started a new career as a Spanish interpreter in hospitals, and I never, ever thought of doing that before. So even at age 66, you can start a new career, which in my case was very helpful because my mother was 90. She was not well, and I could accept assignments or not. I mean, I go to Honduras every year. I've been back 9 times already. I spend the month of February there. I work with medical brigades, and I have some kids on scholarship, and I'm associated with a center for blind adults that teaches them skills like massage or music, or even helps them become lawyers or teachers. And also a rehabilitation center. So I have all those projects, which are partially supported by my book sales, not in full because it's not enough, but it's a help, and I look forward to that every year, and I'm planning to go again in February of this year.
Well, let's step back for just a little bit. So how would even somebody, if they said, I really want to give back, what kind of conversation would you have with someone over the age of 60 to say, you know, you really need to think about this, this, and this? Because you can't just say, well, I'm going to go sign your life on a piece of paper and you're out the door, right? Or can you?
No, you really have to think about it, and you have to know that it's not all fun and games. You'll have challenges. Certainly I did. I got malaria, even though we were taking a malaria prophylactic. You can still get it. I was almost hit by lightning, and the thunderclap was so loud. Fortunately, the lightning didn't hit me, but the thunderclap caused me to have some small hearing loss in my right ear. You can't expect that everything is going to go your way. I think maybe the worst thing that happened to me, and I don't want to scare people, but it was scary. I was in two towns. One is in the south. It was called El Triunfo. It was near the Nicaraguan border. That's the triumph of my book title. And the other was La Esperanza, the Hope, which is a town that was up in the mountains. And I was sleeping in a little house and in a compound, and my landlord's house was right adjacent. And suddenly I wake up in the middle of the night, and there's a guy walking, creeping around in my little house. And I thought, well, is this a dream or is this true? And then I screamed really, really loud. Fortunately, he wasn't armed. He ran out the front door, and I had screamed so loud, the landlord and his family came outside, and they said, what happened? I woke them up. And it turned out these houses had tile roofs, and he had taken the tiles off, and he had come through the ceiling. And I don't know if he thought I wasn't there or what, but anyway, that scared me a lot. And there was a medical student from the U.S. in that town working, and I said, come and stay with me so that I won't be alone. But that was probably the scariest thing. But I had many wonderful experiences, too, but that kind of set me back for a few days.
Well, I think probably, do you have to do a health screening, or do you have to present yourself? Do you have to pay to go, or how, or do you have to get, what do you have to start with?
To join the Peace Corps?
Right.
You know, it takes you about a year to go through the whole process. You have to be fingerprinted. They look into your records of money that you might owe. You have to have a health and dental screening, references, an interview. So it's not a very easy procedure. However, I would say that the Peace Corps it adapts to certain conditions. For example, I started a support group for people over 50. We called it Oaks because we had a logo that was an oak tree. And then we said, well, what could that stand for? We decided older and knowing souls. And we would sometimes, although most of our colleagues were younger, the average age in the Peace Corps is 27, once in a while we wanted to be with older folks and talk about our kids or our spouses or whatever, and so we would do that sometimes on the weekend. Anyway, there was a woman in that group who had insulin-dependent diabetes, for example. She was accepted, and the Peace Corps provided her with insulin in a styrofoam container every week, and she was allowed to have electricity and a little refrigerator. And I know a woman who's blind who taught English in Morocco for the Peace Corps. I've known several deaf volunteers who taught American Sign Language in Kenya, which is basically an English-speaking country. And I know of at least one, a woman who was in a wheelchair in Africa, and they not only were providing service, but they were role models for the people in those countries. So I think, you know, you wouldn't want to have something that needs constant medical attention. But I think, you know, certain things can be adapted. And I think older volunteers really have a lot to offer. People in third world countries, developing countries, give them more respect. We had more knowledge. We weren't as easily, we didn't as easily become depressed or homesick as sometimes the younger volunteers did. And very often we were mentors to the younger volunteers. So I think it's good to have a mix of ages. The younger people could play soccer and they could dance all night maybe with some of the local people, but we had our role too.
I think the older people have so much more experience. Me, myself, I'll be 60 soon, and I just notice as, you know, when I'm speaking with my kids and they're going through something and I'll say, well, let me tell you about when I went through that, and they're like, oh, I don't want to know, I don't want to know. And then you wait about a year or two and they come back and they say, well, this is how it panned out. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's just what I was going to tell you, but okay, you know.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, you just have to step back and let them play through it, but it's so good to have that outlook.
Yeah, I think it was good that we were there. The Peace Corps has about 7% of their volunteers are over 50. Now, let me say that there is also a new offering for people who have 10 years of experience in some kind of field that really is needed in the world or in a country, and especially if they have the language. Of course, some countries have English as their language. If you have the 10 years of experience, you can go into the Peace Corps for less than the regular 27 months. You would go maybe from 3 to 12 months. That's called Peace Corps Response. And if anyone is maybe interested in that, they should look on the Peace Corps Response website. And, of course, there are many very short-term things like these medical brigades that I participate with. One is every year is International Health Service of Minnesota. It's IHSMN, excuse me, IHSMN.org, and we're totally volunteer, no building, no overhead. Everybody pays their own way. You bring your own tent and sleeping bag, and we need nurses, doctors, pharmacists, dentists, dental assistants. So if anyone especially is interested in February and going, check it out on the website, and you'll have an experience that you will never forget. Of course, there are sister city and church groups and Kiwanis and Habitat for Humanity. There are other organizations that do short-term assignments in other countries, and I think in all cases it's very enriching and maybe would make you wonder if you would want to stay for a longer period of time in a Peace Corps type situation. For me, coming back to the States after 3.5 years, the reverse culture shock of that was really worse than when I first went to Honduras. When you come back and you have all this hustle and bustle and you have 30 kinds of salad dressing and people passing on the street, sometimes without saying hello, you think, gee, I think I'd like to go back to Honduras. And it does help me, the fact that I get to go back every year. So you get a relationship with the country that where you served as a Peace Corps volunteer.
I think you get a relationship, too, with human beings, which, as you know, many people in many different large cities will find that they are lacking these days. I know when I travel, you know, my husband always opens the door, just does it for everybody, always has. You know, and we went to, I think we were in California, and he went to open the door for someone, and they got kind of mad at him. You know, and I was like, just blow it off, just let it go, you know, what's the difference? And one time he had forgotten to open the door for me, and I was sitting in the car. He says, why aren't you getting out? I said, what did you forget? I said, that's the only reason I'm here. You know, you forgot to come and open the door. He's like, yeah, I did. But even just to have a relationship with other people, because, you know, you get so wrapped up in it. When I go to the grocery store, I say hello to everybody that's in there, or someone goes to buy a tomato, I say, oh, gosh, those aren't really good. You don't want to buy those. Buy those other ones, you know. And people just don't even talk to anybody anymore.
Well, one thing, when I go to Honduras, I go every year. Of course, now they kind of, since I've been back 9 times, they kind of know I might come at that time of year. But
right.
I show up with my suitcase. They don't know I'm coming. Most of them don't have a phone or they don't have internet. And they say, come right in and stay. And I do. And, in fact, people fight over me. Now, this is, of course, in a small town more than
right.
A city. And the cities in Honduras are dangerous, so I try not to stay very long in a city. Operation Smile, which is a cleft palate hair lift medical brigade, is in a city, in the capital city, Tegucigalpa, and I do stay for that. But then I try to go with my International Health Service of Minnesota. We go to very remote villages where the people are extremely happy to see us. They're very sweet. They feed us. They entertain us at night. They patrol our campground at night to make sure that nobody will do anything to us. Of course, nobody probably knows where we are. So they're delightful people, very warm and very welcoming. So that in itself, we work very hard when we're there. We see an awful lot of patients, and we don't have a lot of facilities. Everything we have to bring with us. But
you know, I think it's absolutely incredible where people now these days are saying that I have to have my health care, I have to have all of this, blah, blah, when they really don't realize all that health care is just that something there that you're paying a lot of money for, so that when you really hit the wall, it's going to pick up the pieces. When really what you're doing is teaching the people to go and take care of themselves along the way instead of waiting for that wall to hit. And it's just such a different idea of thinking, too, you know. I mean, you wouldn't dare want – I mean, people are trying to do it, but here in the U.S. where people are saying, well, you know, would you think about changing your diet? Would you think about this? Would you think about maybe not getting that prescription and trying something different? And they look at you like you've got an antenna out your nose and 10 eyes, you know, whereas, you know, in another country, that's a given. Oh, you're giving me a suggestion? I would love to try it. You know, maybe you have already known about it. They're like just so happy for you to offer and share information, whereas here it's sort of like, prove it to me, show me the studies, and it's like, really? You know?
No.
And I think it's such a difference.
They taught me about herbal medicine, which they use a lot there because they don't buy prescription drugs. And And always when we were trying to impart information as Peace Corps volunteers, it wasn't like we're standing up on a podium and telling them what it is. They are participating with us. They are exchanging information with us. We were supposed to train midwives. I think the midwives trained us more. And, of course, it was kind of a farce that young male and female volunteers in their 20s were trying to tell these midwives what to do. I was the only one that had ever given birth to a child. And so I think, you know, you learn from them. And we would make up skits. We would songs. For AIDS Day, certainly young people would do skits about AIDS and AIDS prevention, and you let them go with it. And so, you know, it's never that we're just imparting a book knowledge to them. It's not at all, not at all. And I learned an awful lot from them, too, as well as they from me. And when I go back every year, I have some ladies that I've trained in the villages. And, of course, now, unfortunately, the Peace Corps last year left Honduras after 50 years because of concerns about safety. So now there aren't any volunteers. But I go back every year, and I meet with my ladies that I trained, and I kind of, they're volunteers, give them a little boost to keep them going, because they're needed more than ever now.
So are there, if you could share with the listeners, so there's other places that people can go to. They're not locked into just one location. And as we've said in the beginning, is that there's varying times that you can offer and volunteer. So do you have just a few suggestions of other areas where the Peace Corps do go?
The Peace Corps goes to about 75 countries around the world.
Really?
They go to Thailand. They even go to China, which you wouldn't have expected. Some of the Pacific Islands in the Middle East, Morocco, Jordan, many countries in Africa. In Latin America, in Central America, in Mexico even. Now, in Mexico, though, they want more advanced people, especially if you know about computers and either programming or fixing computers. They're trying to get more IT going in Mexico. They send you only to safe places. The Peace Corps is very safety conscious, so... but I also think people have to be aware of their own safety, and I would recommend that any single women, especially young women, not live by themselves. They should do as I did, try to find a family maybe that has a compound, either live in their house or if they have a little other house, you know, share that so that you have somebody nearby. 'Cause in those countries, single women do not live alone, and I think some of the danger that some young women have faced is because they are too independent, and it doesn't fit with the culture of that country.
But also, too, what you're saying is that with the Peace Corps, you have someone behind you. It's not like you're just going off and you're saying, I'm going to go volunteer. You know, I mean, I live in New Orleans, and everybody under God's green earth came here to volunteer after the hurricane, which it was well appreciated every single second. But a lot of them found themselves in situations where they shouldn't have been also. And because, you know, you would think that, oh, well, we're just assuming it because, you know, hey, you know, it's no big deal. It's a big city. Everything's going to be fine. And they found themselves not having that experience. So I'm sure when you think of, like, China or Japan or Africa, you say, oh, it's great. I'm going to go on a vacation because I always wanted to see it there. Well, you're going for a purpose. You know, you're going for a purpose to help people and give of your talents and your experience. You're not just going there to, you know, party hardy, as most of the teens would say, right?
Well, some of the volunteers in Honduras, when they first came, they said, "We're not in the Peace Corps, we're in Vacation Corps." But found out differently. At the beginning, we had a three-month training program. It was mostly language. In my case, I already knew the language, so I volunteered in the office, and I did some things in the town where our training center was. But when you're out by yourself in a village, which I was, I had a fellow volunteer for 9 months, a young man, but he left early, and that sometimes happens with younger people, that I don't think they can sustain it as well. But I was pretty integrated. But you have to be careful, and you have to know the environment that you're in, and not take extra chances. And despite that, of course, I told you about this man coming through the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't anticipate all of that. But I have to say, having lost my kids, my two boys, you know, it's like I'm not as afraid of anything, 'cause I feel
right.
I've already, the worst has happened to me. I do have three other children. I have two grandchildren. I have a great-grandson. They're very precious to me, and I wouldn't want to endanger myself unnecessarily. But in a way, I'm more fearless than I was before, and little things don't bother me. You know, if something,
right.
someone says a rude thing to me, or if I get a parking ticket or whatever. I don't actually have a car now, but if I have a rental car and something happens, a flat tire, I don't get too upset, because I feel, well, I've survived much worse than this, so I can't worry about
it. And I think that sometimes when we have a life-changing event, such as the deaths of your sons, it does make you say, what is most important? Because you can't go through that experience and come out on the other side the same as you were going in. I don't really think anyone can. It has to change something in you.
Absolutely, and I think you do appreciate your other children, if you have other children, if you're fortunate enough, which I am. You know, become very precious. Now, for a time, I was overly worried about them. If they didn't call me, if they didn't come home on time,
right.
I'm thinking the worst thing could have happened to them. But I have to say, I found some solace in a group called the Compassionate Friends, and I would recommend that to anyone who's listening who is unfortunate enough to have lost a child. Somehow in society, we expect to lose our parents, maybe our spouse, our siblings, our friends, but someone younger, we expect our kids to carry on after we're gone. And mm-hmm. since it's not something that's that common in this country, fortunately, people don't know how to react. They don't know how to treat you. They don't know what to say to you, because they think, what a horrible thing. They don't even want to think that their child might die. And so to be with this group, the Compassionate Friends, which is on a website, too, if anyone wants to find it, where you have other people who've gone through that same experience, you can give them comfort. We can talk freely. That was very helpful to me, especially in the beginning of my grieving process. So that organization, it's all volunteer too, is very helpful if anyone has had my misfortune, which I hope you haven't and never will.
And I think that some people, too, might carry that so long with them that they lose their own life in the process. I have seen that so many times with some relatives that they had lost a child very early in their life. And in the process, the rest of their life was so shattered and that they could not, they created a life going forward for themselves that was a shadow of what really they could have been. And, you know, and they would lead such a life of anger and such despise at, you know, life is not good, life is hard, life is terrible, you know, you just got to get up and meet the bulldog every day, you know, kind of idea, when really that's not, I don't believe, why we are here or what life is supposed to be.
Well, of course, all of us are going to die sooner or later, including our children, maybe after us. And it is, when it first happens to you, you are angry because you feel like someone is to blame for this. And I'm sure that's behind some of these lawsuits where people want a whole lot of money, which, of course, is not going to bring back their child or even comfort them particularly. And
right.
I just think, you know, you have to grieve and you have to go through that. But I think to live your whole life in that is a loss not only of your child's life but of your life. So, it did help me that I have other children and I have grandchildren and I have my great grandson who is 6 years old, and so you know you have hope for them, but still you know. I can't say I forget my boys. I certainly don't, and I don't forget them now. The anniversary of their deaths is now in December, and my son actually died on my older daughter's birthday, so that's a hard day. You know, I'm happy that she's here, but I can't help thinking about him. And mm-hmm. I can't say that we are much in a holiday mood ever. But I don't think you can live your life. I mean, you try to extract and you try to create a life of some pleasure, some utility. Even so, and I think you still have a lot to give, even though you've had this terrible loss. It's kind of like losing a limb or something, and you compensate. And you go forward, you're never going to get that limb back, but you still can do things, and that's how I kind of view it.
Yeah, and to keep knowing that, I mean, if you're getting up every day, you still have a life, and that is still such a gift, I find, you know, each day that you have, to be able to do something with it instead of, you know, sitting there complaining about it or holding on to your grief. As you and I said in the beginning of the show, you know, I used to say, you know, that, what did I say, all of my troubles are behind me now. They're just stuck to my butt, you know. I don't have to have them in front of them. They're not creating my experience now, but they're behind me, you know. They're in the
right.
In the shadows.
And it did. You know, in Honduras, some people lost their children, if anything, more often than here. And I was able to comfort them more than if I had not gone through that experience. So it was useful. I think you have to find something that's meaningful to you. And maybe sometimes I'm too busy. I'm a volunteer with Amnesty International. I belong to three nonprofit boards. One is involved with international adoptions. I have my work in hospitals with my Spanish interpretation. I go to Honduras every year. I have my family. You know, sometimes I think maybe I'm doing a little too much to try to get beyond the grief, but I think if you're having to choose between sitting there and mourning or getting out and doing something, the choice is it's better to be too busy than not busy enough. And I feel as long as I have health and strength, I'd like to take advantage of it. And that's what I'm doing right now. I'm 75. I'm still going strong.
Goodness. You know, I really think that what you're doing is so inspiring. I mean, because if anybody is listening, take just one or two words what we've said on this show and say, well, I'll think about it. That's all we're asking you for, is to think about it, because then eventually you'll say, you know, I remember something was said, and you can always come back to this link about this show and play it again, because this will be on the archives for a year or so or more, and it's just really important, you know, to play it and to hear somebody else, you know, like Barbara saying, you know, I pulled myself together, I picked myself up, and now I'm giving to all these other people. And that is so, I don't know, to me it's just like heartwarming. It's just inspiring.
Well, may I say, several people who have read my book, people I've never known, they got it on Amazon or they got it on Kindle or the Nook. Anyway, they've gotten in touch with me because in the back of the book I have a bio and I have my blog address, and I have a you can communicate via my blog and my email address is there. But several people have actually joined the Peace Corps. Many of them were people over 50, and they have communicated with me from the country that they're in, and that is very, very heartwarming to me that they were not discouraged. You know, I don't gloss over the problems. I've already told you some of them, but I think I also talk about the rewards, and I think just being in the Peace Corps itself is a life-changing experience. You don't have to have the loss of your child to change your life. You can join the Peace Corps, and you will have, no matter what your age, you will have an experience that will change your life. I guarantee that.
And I just think that's so important. You know, I would always have people saying to me about, you know, well, they're looking for something outside themselves. They're looking for happiness somewhere else. But really, you have to find the happiness in you and share it with others. But it's supposed to be really, I see life as interaction with people. It's not you're looking for, you know, the material things that are there, or you're looking for other people to do something to you to affect how you're going to be able to be. You know, so you're really offering, you know, with the Peace Corps and what you're saying in your book is offering a way to say, think of something outside, you know, think of something different. I know when they read your book, as I have, you know, it just, these little pieces or sentences, it would say, you know, you think about it. Maybe you want to try this. Or isn't this really cool? Or look at what I'm doing here. You know, and that would give somebody an idea. It would, like, be a stimulation to be able to think about it.
And some people have said to me, how can you possibly live in a place, well, for example, in the first town, El Triunfo, the Triumph, we cooked over wood outside, okay? We bathed, there was something like a cement basin where water would flow in several times a week and it would fill up, and you take a bucket or a pan and you wash your clothes and you flush the toilet with a bucket and you pour water over yourself. And they say, that must be really hard. But, you know, that's the easiest part. You get used to that. Everyone else is doing it. It's no big deal. And it becomes a habit. And, in fact, when you come back here and you say, running water, the electricity's always working, you know, it seems strange, hot and cold water. You adapt to that, and that is the least of your problems, frankly. And the richness of the and the gratitude and the friendship of people, at least in Honduran people, and I think it's true in many rural areas of developing countries, the people are just so thrilled to have a visitor or someone coming from the outside. You know, it's an interesting experience for them. And people are, when I go there, as I say, people always want to host me. When I was living there, people wanted of me to live with them. And
right.
you know, it's kind of nice actually to be maybe a big fish in a little pond like that. And I'm kind of a little bit of a famous person. When I go to one of these towns, everybody knows. They call me Doña Barbara. And, Doña Barbara, you came back. And to help these children with the medical brigades, when I go back, last time I was there, I met two parents whose child I had taken for hair, lip, and cleft palate surgery. In one case, they came to my medical brigade. The boy came, and I saw, you know, where we'd had the surgery. I really didn't remember him, but his family remembered me. And that's really, you know, several years ago. And now he can, because of that surgery, he speaks well. He can eat well. He can whistle, things that he couldn't do before. And so that, you know, you think, well, I had an impact on someone. And
that's right.
It changed their life. And that's nice. You know, you feel good about that. And it's such a little effort on your part, really, to do something like that. So I have to say the medical brigade participation, which I've continued with, was one of the highlights. I was a health volunteer, but I think that was one of the most important things that I participated in.
So, Barbara, what does your year look like going forward? You're now how old?
75.
Wow.
You know, I don't know if I can go on forever, but I would like, if I'm thinking, I would like to join this Peace Corps response where you go from 3 to 6, 9 months maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I can do it now because I think my interpretation people wouldn't like me to be gone that long. They complain about my being gone a month every year. But maybe if I get to 80 and I'm in reasonable health, I will retire from the interpreting and go into Peace Corps response. And I think I would enjoy that. I think I would go to a Spanish-speaking country. I think if I were 80, I wouldn't want to try to learn another language at that point. So I might as well use the one that I've already got. And being an interpreter helps me stay connected to Latin America because the people that I'm serving that come into hospitals and such here in Washington, D.C., where I live, you know, it's like a connection to their country, and some of them are from Honduras, and some of them are from the very towns that I was in, and that really is very exciting if it happens, which not too often, but it has happened to me. So, they're very grateful because when you're in the hospital or you have a serious health problem and you don't understand what's going on, that's very difficult. So it's comforting to have someone with you. And so I feel that my work is an extension of my volunteer service.
I think you are helping so many people, and it just continues to follow you. You know, whether you're overseas or if you're here, you know, you'll meet all kinds of people that have been really affected by you just being in their presence. And I really think, I'd like to thank you for that because I think that is inspiring to me. Because when I read your story, it's like, goodness, I think I might want to do that. And then I'm like, I don't want to go overseas, but I'll find another way. But it does have you think about other things you can do and how you can help other people. You don't always have to do the route that you did, but it is showing you that there are opportunities out there to be able to help other people.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying that the Peace Corps is the only one. You know,
right.
Obviously not everybody wants to go, will be accepted. It's
mm-hmm.
not appropriate. There aren't enough spaces in the Peace Corps for everyone. But certainly here at home, there are lots of things you can do. I mean, I'm doing some of them myself. For example, with Amnesty International, you can join that. You can join a service club like Rotary or Kiwanis. They've invited me to speak sometimes, and they're doing things here in this country and in other countries. So I think that you go to hospitals and just be a volunteer and sit with someone. That in its or in a hospice, that can be very rewarding. So I wish I had more time. I might do more than what I'm doing,
right.
But they're only 24 hours in the day, so I can't do more. But and I have a family. I have to be with my kids sometimes too, because I certainly cherish my kids. I mean, we all cherish our kids, but if you have lost any of your kids, you just, you appreciate so much the ones that you have, and so I want to spend as much time with them as I can, as I said, only 24 hours, and we have to sleep sometimes, we have to eat, we have to do a few other things, so I try to... I don't have TV. That's one thing I absolutely gave up when I came back from Honduras. I don't have a car. I decided, well, I lived there with no car. I don't need it. I'm in a city. I can use public transportation. I can rent one if I need it. But I'm just not going to clutter up the environment with my car.
Yeah,
so. Hondurans taught me to have a smaller carbon footprint, which, of course, they have a much smaller one than we have in the United States. And I tried to carry that over here while also trying to be effective in different ways. So, there's so many opportunities in life. And now with the Internet, you can find something that you can do, I think, something that fits your own orientation, your skills,
mm-hmm.
and we all have skills, and I think even the smallest person, if you will, I mean, you know, I'm a little old lady, 75 years old, and other people, you know, the things that we do every day is part of life and part of the world, and you know, we're an essential part of the world, every single one of us. As the song says, we are the world, and without us, leaders would have no followers. So I think that you know, we should never feel that we're insignificant, because I think every one of us is absolutely significant.
Well, Barbara, we're coming to the end of the show. Do you have a suggestion? Do you have any volunteer groups that are looking for specific things like money or certain kinds of donations?
Well, I would certainly like people who either want to donate or want to come with us to Honduras, to the International Health Service of Minnesota, IHSMN.org. We'd love to have you, especially if you're a medical practitioner. If you want to become a member of an Amnesty International group, I belong to a local. I belong to Amnesty International since 1981. I'm now in charge of the whole Caribbean. I'm a volunteer. I've been a volunteer for 33 years. That's an option if that suits you. If I belong to a church group, I think anyone has that option. You know, take your pick. It's all around us. And I would do more if I had more time, but I don't. I have to say no. I belong to three boards only because I was invited. Believe me, I wasn't. I didn't seek it out. But and also I host people from other countries who come here. Of course, I'm in Washington where a lot of visitors arrive, but you can do that. People who need temporary place to stay and they don't have a connection. Now, with the Internet, it's easy to communicate that. I recently had a young man from Nigeria, an artist, who was at the Museum of African Art for 2 months. He stayed with me. Inquire and see what's available to you. Those are some suggestions from my life, at least, and I'm sure depending on what your concerns are and what you like to do and what your abilities are, you can find ample many places where you would be welcome. But we would certainly welcome you at International Health Service of Minnesota. You have to bring your own tent, your own sleeping bag. You'll use the solar shower. The solar shower is a bag of water that you put out in the sun, and then in the evening it comes down. And in International Health Service of Minnesota, we desperately need medical people, but also just helpers that set things up and move things from place to place, a shortwave radio operator, in case we need to communicate with the outside world. So there are other things that people can do. They don't have to be medical people, so... Those are my suggestions. That's from my life. But you have your life, so find what you like to do and can do and do it.
Thank you so much for being with us today. I'm sure if everybody is sitting around listening to this, they have to at least have something turn inside them that would say they need to do something else. Could you please, in closing, give us your website where your blog posts are?
Okay, it's http://, Honduras Peace Corps, and it's Peace Corps, C-O-R-P-S, .com, .blogspot, excuse me, I'm giving you the wrong thing. Honduras Peace Corps is all one word, .blogspot. That's one word, .com. And on there, you can communicate with me or at my, I don't want to give it over the phone, my email, but my email is on there. So, and I have a lot of pictures on there. And I talk about all my activities. And every year when I go to Honduras, I give a full report with a zillion photographs of everything. So you can look back on March, April of the previous years, and you will find those pictures.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for being with us today. It's been a pleasure having you as a guest.
All right, and I hope some people will buy my book, Triumph and Hope, on Amazon, because that really helps me with my projects. And I have a young man now in nursing school who he's in his second year. They're 2 years. And he's one of seven children. He lives in a village, no electricity, no running water. And how do I know this young man and how is he inspired? I took his sister to get a tumor removed from her leg. And he became interested, and now he's a nursing student. So he's one of my scholarship students, and I expect to see him in February when I go. So thank you so much for inviting me, Dr. Jeanette. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure having you. Thank you so much.
All right. Good night.
Thank you. If anyone would like some more information about Barbara Jo and her website and blog post are listed on today's show page, and there is also a direct link to her book by purchasing her book, Proceeds Do Go, to all of her projects where she does give back to others. So please do check out that book, and also please do check out her Blogspot. You'll be able to also contact her directly through that Blogspot if you have some questions. Thank you so much for being with us today. You know, it just goes to show you that it does not matter at any age. You really can give back to anyone. Barbara is in her 70s and going strong. And just don't let, you know, just don't let your grief, loss of a loved one, or some event in your life happen that will also take you down for the rest of your life. Just get up, be able to put something back together again, and keep on going. Thank you so much for being with us today, and until tomorrow, this is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and have a great evening. Thank you.